You've heard me say for years that NT Factor is the breakthrough supplement that's proven to repair and renew your body's cells. That includes your immune cells, such as your T cells and white blood cells. NT Factor has been shown to contribute to a more robust and effective immune response. So now that we're in cold and flu season, NT Factor is combining with powerful antioxidants, vitamin C and D, to provide you with an immune booster bundle. Vitamin C and D help stimulate the production of white blood cells and activate immune cells, which play a key role in defending against pathogens. Together with NT Factor, they help modulate immune function, reduce inflammation, and promote overall immune health. For a limited time, buy a bottle of NT Factor with D3K2 and get a bottle of C1000 with NT Factor absolutely free. That's a savings of over $26. Just go to ntfactor.com. That's ntfactor.com. Save over $26 on the powerful cocktail of vitamins C and D with NT Factor at ntfactor.com. Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and today we're talking about MSG and MSG-like compounds that are ubiquitous in our food supply. And according to today's guests, Dr. Catherine Reed and Dr. Barbara Price, are making us sick and addicted to ultra-processed foods. We laid down the groundwork for our discussion in part one, so I hope you heard about it. But this is a controversial proposition because, there's this thing called Chinese restaurant syndrome. And if you look at the history of Chinese restaurant syndrome, this is a thing, even when I was a kid, you know, you go to a Chinese restaurant and you'd say, no MSG. Why? Because people would say, I don't know, I feel funny when I eat Chinese food. So skip the MSG in my food. People would complain of headaches. People would complain of stomach pain. People would complain of just a sort of a generalized icky feeling. And all this was attributed to an article that appeared in a medical journal that later supposedly was debunked. The article talked about this phenomenon of Chinese restaurant syndrome, and then it was challenged. Fast forward to 2020, and a company that makes Ajinomoto, I don't know how many metric tons of this stuff they make, but potentially hundreds of thousands and millions of tons. It's a big industrial conglomerate in Japan, one of the world's biggest chemical and food producers. It's called Ajinomoto. They make amino acids. They make MSG. They initiated a campaign to, quote, redefine Chinese restaurant syndrome. And they hired journalists to write articles. And I have one of the articles here in front of me, so permit me to just read from this article. This past year, a campaign to redefine Chinese restaurant syndrome, CRS, was launched by activists around the world. Is this a real grassroots program or is this AstroTurf, I ask myself. CRS is actually defined in the Merriam-Webster Dictionary as a group of symptoms held to affect susceptible persons eating food heavily seasoned with monosodium glutamate. The campaign's argument is that this definition is not only scientifically false, but it also upholds the racism and xenophobia that spawned the term in the first place. And what they say here is that, like salt, MSG enhances and amplifies flavors and became widely used in Eastern Asia as U.S. immigration restrictions on East Asian countries loosened to the early mid-20th century. Families from those nations enter the United States in larger, they sort of accuse America of racism in the early 1900s. But then they loosened their immigration restrictions and more Asians came to America. And what they say here is that this is part of America's tradition of xenophobia and racism because there's a campaign these days, End Asian Hate. And so they're trying to tie in opposition to MSG to a campaign to stigmatize folks from Asia. What say you, doctors? Are you xenophobes and racists?
I mean, I would agree that America probably does have a racist problem, but not associated with MSG. The American diet, standard American diet, which, you know, kind of colloquially refer as SAD, has more MSG than the Chinese diet. And again, it's because of the degree of ultra-processed foods and the protein content of these processings that is going on, that the Americans, as is also shown by our weight gain and the statistics of our health report card, have much more significant MSG in our food supply than the Chinese. So this is not against the Chinese diet. The Ajinomoto, you know, Japanese sources, I mean, even Japan diets are better than Americans because they do have more fibers and are consuming more plants, whole food plant sources than the Americans that don't have as much ultra-processed foods. But the ultra-processed foods is a modern diet issue. So we're not signaling any sort of ethnicity. It's really modern diets and the ultra processing is where the MSG is coming from.
There may actually be some reverse racism in Japan or China when they try to keep McDonald's and other fast food emporia from showing up in their countries, introducing even more MSG than they ever thought of.
Exactly. Yeah. So those would be some high sources, grams and grams with those little, you know, Big Mac meals. And so, you know, I'm not surprised that a conflict of interest of Ajinomoto would state such a, you know, claim that there is no, you know, founding health issues with MSG because their entire corporate profits rely on people thinking that this is not an issue.
Yeah, and it's a clear AstroTurf campaign, and to invoke racism is the height of absurdity here. But it is, you know, since this is such a hot button issue in our cultural scene, you know, I think it's a great hook to get people to kind of look the other way when it comes to symptoms. And they also claim that these symptoms are imagined, right? That it's a, you know, a nocebo effect. A placebo effect means that you take something, you feel better. A nocebo effect is you're told it's bad and then you feel worse. So what does the research say about Chinese restaurant syndrome? It's claimed, I mean, you look it up in Wikipedia and they say, oh, doubts have been cast on whether this is a real phenomenon, that people feel poorly after eating food laced with MSG.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, as Barbara was stating earlier, you know, there is a massive obfuscation effort, to, you know, just like there was with the nicotine tobacco controversies for so long, or climate change or whatever. You know, of course, there's a lot of vested interest to keeping the science obfuscation efforts going to increase corporate profits. And yeah, that still obviously, you know, continues. And there's a study, and I think it may have gotten clipped from the book. You know, we had to kind of shorten the things from the book, but there was a safety study, quote unquote, you know, by some of the best, you know, Harvard, MIT, you know, some of the best medical schools out there. And I went through, you know, point by point, you know, why the safety study is not how we would conduct a really, truly unbiased safety study. You know, they weren't allowing enough time between the crossovers with exposure and non-exposure between the two groups. And there are a lot of variety of different symptoms, you know, because we have glutamate receptors all over our bodies and genetics, you know, there is a huge variety. So somebody might get a headache. Another person might get heart, you know, palpitations. Another one might sweat. Another person might.
Well, sweating is almost a ubiquitous symptom of that. And, you know, I used to say when I got MSG, it would sort of feel the sweat on the back of my neck. You know, I could tell I get that, or like a tight feeling in, like, not a frontal headache in the front, but like sort of in the back of the head.
Yeah. Yeah. And I, you know, I could start to feel it tingling on my tongue, but I will get a headache and just nausea. You know, so I do think
it's very individual.
And, you know, with my youngest daughter, you know, I was able to see that her language started to improve when I started to identify glutamate sources in the food supply and completely cut these things out. Wow. You know, language is improving. Her anxiety went down. Her depression, you know, her mood was just so much better. But, you know, I work with, you know, clients and just kind of helping with just general reducing inflammation. Glutamate is associated with inflammation, and those pathways are just well known with the cytokine, you know, release and pro-inflammatory cytokines release with glutamate surges.
Well, chapter
and
by...
I could add that...
Go ahead. Go ahead.
I would add regarding safety studies is that it's truly, unless the researchers have identified all the sources of MSG and glutamate in foods that you may not be aware of, it's very hard to have a control.
Right.
Because you might be replacing something, say, oh, we've taken out MSG glutamate, and then replacing it with something that has hidden sources. So it's unlikely. I mean, Katie spent a lot of time finding these sources and going through patent and researching this. And if I would think it's highly unlikely that other researchers conducted that kind of research, you know, in order to establish their experimental design. It's very, very hard to do.
I think the research underwriting is biased towards debunking Chinese restaurant syndrome and exonerating MSG, because that is a follow the money principle. It's really not so much about demonstrating the harms, because that would cut into a major source of revenue. In a chapter 7 in your book entitled Glutamate and Disease, you list a catalog of conditions that may be associated with glutamate toxicity or MSG hypersensitivity. So what are some of them? I mean, you list addiction, obviously we talked about that, but then there's some neurodegenerative disorders that may be associated with it, Alzheimer's disease. Then there's also mood disorders, anxiety, ADD, autism, and even depression. And then there's metabolic disorders, neurological conditions, multiple sclerosis, Parkinson's, even severe mental disorders like schizophrenia and seizure disorders. So maybe could you touch upon those, and, you know, how is it that these problems are so ubiquitous?
Yeah, I mean, I think addiction is a fascinating one, you know, that the underlying mechanism neurologically to addiction is this glutamate signaling. So we're talking about the function of glutamate being a neurotransmitter. And so you've got these, you know, neural maps that we all have, you know, that wire us to respond to our environment accordingly. Well, the underlying mechanism of us, you know, and what is an addiction is when we habitually reach for something or do something that is not in our best interest health-wise, and we can start to say that that's not good for our health, and that might be an addiction such as alcohol. Well, the underlying mechanism of like alcohol addiction is a glutamate neural pathway to that substance.
So do you see this as potentially a gateway drug to other addictions? Is that the idea there?
Oh, it's the underlying mechanism of every single addiction. So,
okay.
You know, so if, you know, if it's methamphetamine or alcohol, uh-huh. or, you know, devices, if you think about there's a neurological wiring, you know, in our brain to say that we want to go for our devices, it's a glutamate signaling pathway. So if you add then glutamate to that, it's only reinforcing that neural pathway, okay. that glutamate neural pathway to that substance. So it's the underlying mechanism of what's wiring us to that addiction. And so with autism, the glutamate receptors being overactivated. So if we call it a neurodivergent brain, where we're talking about our neural maps, and a neurodivergent brain might be one that's more prone to a survival-like brain that's easily in a survival mode, fight, flight, fear, fawn. You then think about the enrichment fortification of glutamate consumption over activating those glutamate receptors, which would put us in a even more neurodivergent survival state. And that's exactly what I see when I'm working with a lot of people on the spectrum, not just children.
Sometimes called regression, like behavior that's regression to some more primitive response state.
Right. Primitive reflexology, you know, sort of like it really is this survival the neurologic wiring. And so with the late onset sort of neurological degeneration, like, you know, Alzheimer's, for example, you know, what we talked about with the excitotoxicity, and you're starting to, you know, literally excite your cells to death, well, you start to have degradation of your neural pathways that can start to cause neurodegenerative diseases. But the tau protein phosphorylation is glutamate receptor
dependent.
So, you know, you've got dependent. Thank you. Insulin, you know, responses are in a glutamate receptor response also, where you're activating, you know, insulin secretion through a glutamate receptor. So there's a bunch of different, you know, things just based on your genetics.
That would open the door to metabolic disorders like insulin resistance and diabetes. Yeah. So,
exactly. So you just have a whole host based on, it's almost like you have an entire, you know, glutamate receptor with all of these different doors and one key, and that's glutamate. Glutamate's activating this cell and this cell and this cell and all these different types of cells, whether it's on the, you know, the beta cells in the pancreas or on your, you know, nerve cells.
So the response to this is some form of avoidance. So you talk about the roadmap to health, the REED food lifestyle, R-E-I-D. It's an acronym standing for what?
Reduced excitatory inflammatory diet. And it's my last name.
There you go. That's
And, so, you know, and this really was just, you know, a scientist mom trying to help her child who was diagnosed with autism and really trying to figure out how best to help her health, where I started to, you know, change my laboratory from biotechnology into the kitchen. And so the reduced excitatory diet really is about eating whole foods and balance, because we talked about the carnivore diet, but it could potentially still be all whole foods, but it is not well balanced, where you've got protein, fiber, fats, and carbohydrates. And I do emphasize quite a bit of herbs and spices in, because I do think that helps with inflammation. I do think that helps with the microbiome management. And I think our cultures have really kind of gotten away from the herbs and spice important. So we talk about, you know, just how you balance that fat, fiber, protein, carbohydrates, culinary herbs in your foods. And it really is like I like the carnivore element, where the animal protein is flavoring your bed of variety of different vegetables, trying to challenge people like, okay, can you have six different vegetables at dinner? And, you know, you're having your salmon that's flavoring that. And can you have, you know, six herbs and spices there? Some of my early experiments with the herbs and spices were just like, you know, really odd tasting, you know, so I definitely had to kind of experiment like what, you know, kind of complements each other and such. And so I love looking at different ethnic groups and their variety of different combinations of spices and herbs that can make the same 30 foods taste very different depending on how you're adding some herbs and spices.
But as the old song goes, how do you keep them down on the farm after they've seen Gay Paris? Once you become addicted to these excitotoxins, is there a period of withdrawal? Do you then find foods bland or, you know, less appetizing when you go to a clean diet?
Absolutely. You know, one thing I talk when I'm talking to parents about, you know, trying to encourage, you know, the family of going on the reduced excitatory inflammatory diet, and it's in the book, Fat, Stress, and Sick, MSG, Processed Foods and America's Health Crisis, is you will have a period of withdrawal. And so many parents will be like, well, you know, they're eating pancakes and, you know, syrup and this for, you know, breakfast. If I just like don't give that to them, then they're going to throw a fit. And I'm like, it's a battle worth fighting. But you wouldn't want to give your child methamphetamine because they're addicted. You know, if you're really truly feeling like this is not serving their health and you're coming to me because you're concerned about their health, get it out of there. Just absolutely, you know, if you want to do it in a 2-week, you know, sort of plan, go for it. But you shouldn't be starting the clock about how it's improving your health until you've gotten through your entire pantry and your refrigerator and said, okay, it is a whole food diet. I've got, you know, well-balanced meals here. And, you know, these children or people will go through a withdrawal, just like you would if you went on, you know, getting rid of refined sugars or whatnot. But it's 5 days where you're like, if you're, you know, truly got it out of there and, you know, 5 days and the amazing changes that I hear from people, I'm sure you've heard that too, when people are, you know, kind of changing a healthier food lifestyle. It's amazing how fast you can see results. And I mean, I didn't realize I had brain fog for 40 years of my life until I didn't have brain fog and it was all food.
Wow, that's impressive. So how do you make the food flavor? Are there any tricks for making food flavorful without using some of these, accent-like ingredients to spike the food and make it tastier?
Yeah, I mean, personally, you know, I love the Vitamix high-powered blender where I'll be making a lot of my, you know, sauces where I'll make like a nut seed sauce that will kind of bring in some savory sort of flavorings without sort of a soy sauce or, you know, fish paste or whatever kind of processed foods. And making like a chimichurri or your own homemade pesto without cheese and adding these things to help with the flavoring. My own, you know, potatoes, vegetable au gratin doesn't have cheese, but it's got like a nut seed base with lots of herbs and, you know, rosemary and cilantro. So it's the herbs and spices that really help with the flavoring, you know, going back to the whole food natural concept.
Is aged cheese bad per se?
Yeah. So the more aged the cheese, the more the MSG.
Oh.
And all cheese is because, again, the fermentation of casein.
Oh.
Will produce glutamate, and the longer the fermentation and aging process, the more MSG. So Parmesan, as an example, would have more MSG than, for example, mozzarella, but because of the fermentation process. So I kind of advocate in Reed to get rid of gluten and casein because of the processing that's going on there and how much glutamate is associated with those. So it's gluten-free, casein-free, as well as it's all whole foods, but, you know, definitely cutting out the wheat.
And Barbara, you were going to chime in with something.
Right. Yeah, I'll just say from a personal point of view, I learned a lot about food when I started working with Katie, and I took processed food out of my diet. And you do retrain your palate, and you say, well, I've never liked raw broccoli. Actually, after a while, it tastes delicious. And the very interesting thing is that every so often you'll see like something advertised on television, you're like, oh, that great burger. I remember how good that was. Every so often I go back and I try something. It actually doesn't taste that good. It's so curious. I go, you know, this doesn't taste good. This other stuff that I'm now eating, it does taste better. And so even though you think I can never give that up, it's so delicious, you can give it up. The new food is good. And the old food, it doesn't work anymore.
Is there a hierarchy of bad from like the most chemicalized, the most artificial to, you know, something that some people might say is a little less harmful or more innocuous, like sprinkling a little mozzarella on your meatballs?
Yeah. So sprinkling, you know, a little mozzarella on your meatballs with a bunch of, you know, basil and, you know, maybe a bunch of vegetables and, you know, grass fed beef and, you know, herbs and spices would be a lot less horrific than like a caseinate, highly ultra processed, you know, food item where, you know, you've got Kraft macaroni and cheese with a bunch
of
bread.
One of America's favorite dishes.
Exactly. And they banned our ingredient labels on our Kraft macaroni and cheese sold in the United States. They've banned that in Europe. So they've made a special toxic Kraft macaroni and cheese product for the United States. Thank you.
So there's actually regulatory variability when it comes to these ingredients. And they're mostly, I think a lot of regulatory agencies across the world are kind of asleep at the switch, but Europeans tend to be more proactive about their food ingredients, right? I mean, as is illustrated over the controversy about food colorings in kids' cereals, you know, you get a European version, you get a, you know, comparable U.S. version, and there's the list is of additives is much longer in the U.S.
Exactly. So the EU is more strict. I mean, we still have the modern diet, ultra-processed food issues across, you know, all of the world. But EU does have more strict on, you know, glyphosate, you know, the Roundup chemicals in their foods and the labeling there, such what pesticide could be used. But yeah, the Skittles, there's products in Europe that are banned that are sold in the United States. So yeah, they definitely have some a little bit more strict.
So have you missed any of the big themes that you want to bring out in your book in today's discussion?
You know, I think the statistics, we start off with the book kind of just saying, you know, we're the America's health crisis. Why are we using that term in our, you know, book, Fat, Stress, and Sick, MSG, Processed Foods, and America's Health Crisis? And I think the statistics speak for themselves. The obesity being over, you know, 3/4 of our population, having, you know, these weight issues, and that is an energy imbalance issue. And that really does come to, it's not about let's get moving, you know, it's really about let's get eating and rethinking food. And I, you know, definitely think the big food has their vested interests and want to keep consumers kind of in the dark or unblind or blinded. That's the name, Unblind My Mind. And, you know, just kind of really helping people understand how this might be impacting them. I think, you know, that's where that disease chapter came in and what it's, you know, cellularly doing. But yeah, rethink food. You can do it. And I think it just helps with, you know, I think a healthier population is a happier population. So, you know, I like to hang out with happy people. So like to just spread the word and encourage healthy eating.
You, regardless of your feeling about the outcome of the recent election, are you encouraged by the fact that we're platforming Make America Healthy Again, where we're actually talking about, you know, food additives, and we're talking about childhood health and childhood nutrition more as even a political issue, as something that could be a basis for some government action or regulatory reform?
I certainly have talked to RFK, you know, Jr. directly with respect to some of the issues with the food supplies and how it's contributing to health diseases such as autism. So, you know, I'm encouraged that I'm trying to find the silver lining, right. And that is one of them. It's interesting, before they said Make America Healthy Again, I actually coined that before RFK Jr. Came on to the Trump campaign. Then I felt like, oh, no, wait.
That is quite the claim to fame. We're talking to the lady who, you know, you should have trademarked it.
I should have.
Catherine. Okay. Well, that's interesting. Well, maybe, you know, who knows? You might have a direct line to the White House, or at least to an influential government agency in the future. So we hope that
the Reed diet plan, you know, being instituted in schools, you know, across the country, you know, that would be wonderful, huh?
That would indeed. And I'm all for that. I'm on that political platform. Well, thank you very much, Drs. Reed and Dr. Price. And congratulations on your book, Fat, Stressed, and Sick, MSG Processed Food and America's Health Crisis. And there's also more resources at the website, unblindmymind.com or .org?
.org.
.org. So unblindmymind, one word, .org, a nonprofit dedicated to improving health through informed food choices. Lots more information there, but do get the book. If your parent, your grandparent, especially important when it comes to childhood nutrition, because children are much more vulnerable to the adverse effects of these compounds, although throughout the lifespan, they can have deleterious effects. This is most informative, and, you know, we appreciate you updating us on a theme that has been really integral to the critique of America's food supply. You know, we talk about toxic ingredients and additives and food colorings and glyphosate and, you know, excess sugar and poor quality trans fats and omega-6 oils. But I think that this is really worthy of attention, MSG-like compounds and their harmful effects.
Yeah, thank you so much for having us on your show and raising awareness to your listeners.
Indeed.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, guys. I'm Dr. Raul Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.
I want to thank you for listening to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. Follow us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, or your favorite podcast app, and get new episodes automatically downloaded every weekday. And please give us a rating and review. It truly helps new people discover Intelligent Medicine. The Intelligent Medicine Podcast is for general informational purposes only and does not constitute the practice of medicine, nursing, or other professional healthcare services, including the giving of medical advice, and no doctor-patient relationship is formed. The use of information on this podcast or materials linked from this podcast is at the user's own risk. The content of this podcast is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Users should not disregard or delay in obtaining medical advice for any medical condition they may have and should seek the assistance of their healthcare professionals for any such conditions. Finally, please visit drhoffman.com and discover everything Intelligent Medicine has to offer, including frequently updated, unbiased health news and fully vetted product and supplement recommendations. You know how important it is to ensure that your supplements are genuine, safe, and effective. That's why I partnered with Fullscript, an online dispensing platform that only offers curated professional-grade brands I know and trust, the very same supplements that I prescribe to my patients and take myself. Never counterfeit or expired, always stored and shipped correctly. Just go to drhoffmanstore.com to start your free Fullscript account. Buying through Fullscript offers fast shipping, optional refill reminders, a mobile-friendly site. It's safe, secure, and HIPAA-compliant and offers world-class support. Fullscript also gives you access to my custom-targeted supplement protocols that combine the products that I recommend to address specific needs, heart health, immune support, and much more. Just go to drhoffmanstore.com to sign up for your free Fullscript account. You'll get access to the supplements and features you need to help you achieve your wellness goals. That's drhoffmanstore.com, drhoffmanstore.com.